You're listening to Am I Cancelled?
So put your headphones in, tune out the world, and get cancelled with us.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Am I Cancelled? This is your pilot, Edward speaking. Prepare for takeoff. So today on the show, we have Alan Stevens. We talked to him a little bit about his past educational life. And then we discuss how he got into his current career of being a very proficient profiler. Now, I suggest if you would like to learn how to communicate better, you need some coaching, anything of this sort, that you head on over to alanstevens.com.au or go to alanstevens.thinkific.com. That's alanstevens.thinkific.com. Now, he also wants you to know about the Campfire Project, which is a place for men to get together, share their feelings openly, and so much more. It's a way to make connections and just be a part of the world as people should be. If that sounds great to you, go ahead, go to facebook.com/group/The Campfire Project. And right after the commercial break, let's just hop right into the interview with Alan Stevens.
If you would like to interact with the show, be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @am_I_cancelled. And also check out our Facebook page, Am I Cancelled?
Back to the show.
Alan, welcome to the program. It's great to have you here today.
Oh, it's great to be here. So thanks for the invitation, Edward.
No problem. So your education was severely focused on natural language processing, which has to do with humans communicating with artificial intelligence. And I want to know how you went from tech to tech and profiling.
Actually, I'm not into AI. Mine is, you know, your facial features tell me your personality, your body language and expressions then tell me your emotions, and put that together and you've got someone's personality very quickly. I am looking at doing more research into AI because making it easier for people to be able to profile, but profiling correctly is going to be an important thing.
Okay. Yeah, because when I looked it up, it said NLP, and then I look up NLP, what's that? And then I look into the definition, and it spoke about artificial intelligence and human communication. But you're more focused on the profiling side of things.
That's it. So if you think about it, when they talk about artificial intelligence, it's not so much the machinery side of things. It's a dip, you know. This is one of the things we've got to be careful with, is the words that one person used to describe something means something completely different to somebody else.
Right.
But very quickly, if you lift weights, we know we're going to build muscles up. Right. We also know what we feel inside, we express outwardly. So you put that together. If you concentrate very deeply and, you know, you're pulling expressions while you're working, you build ridges and crevices on your face, which is then the history of how you like to think and process. There's your personality. So if I've got that, I know how to talk to you. And then by using NLP or using word structures, I can talk to you in the way that you need to be spoken to. And that way, then I've got your body language and expressions that now give me the feedback. So all of it, there's nothing really artificial about it. It's all what I'm able to do with my own eyes and my own processing. Okay. But we are working on looking at ways in which we can profile people through artificial intelligence. That's the next step that I'm working into next year.
And even if you weren't involved in artificial intelligence, you still were heavily involved in the technology side of the industry. And in 2013, you created an app called Profile Me, the world's first professional profiling app. And could you go into explaining what that is a little bit and how it works?
Yeah, well, the idea was, because I had a number of people had actually trained me on how to read the facial feature side of things, who had wanted to move into using apps to be able to take a photo of somebody and profile them. But the issue is when you're facing towards a camera, if you turn your face slightly to the side or tilt it up or down, the camera is not going to be able to take and recognize your 3D image. We look at an image and we can process the 3D of it, but if an algorithm will only look at the 2D. And so in that two-dimensional, it's going to get asymmetry and things like that mixed up. And so I looked at it and thought we needed something to where we could take a photograph in a way in which we can then move into the artificial intelligence. But there was no mobile phone that could do that. We virtually needed to have four cameras, two above, one, you know, two to the right and two to the left, one above, one below on each side, and then take a photograph simultaneously and then work our composite photo out. The problem with that was there's no devices out there for people to be able to generally do it. So I just came back to, okay, let somebody be able to look at somebody and from the app do a recognition and go, right, if you're looking at a particular feature, like the width of the face, you could look at three images and go wide face, narrow face, in between, look at somebody and go, what are they? And then click the button. At the end of it, it would then give you a report on a number of traits so that you would then know how to read that person. So that was profile me. Then I created profile match, which was you profile yourself, you profile the other person. So on one trait, you might be at one end, and on the that same trait, somebody else you profile is at the different end. It would tell you how to change the way you like to be spoken to match the way they want to be spoken to. And so that was where how to match the way you like to speak to the way the other person needs to be spoken to and treated. And that was the first trait mobile apps that I'd ever seen on the marketplace.
Right.
But next thing will be to, with AI and with the new algorithms, we will be looking at how to be able to take photographs and have the machines do that calculation for us.
Now, explain how this is implemented into, say, job interviews and things of that nature.
One of the things is that you can pretty well guarantee that resumes are next to never complete. They're never accurate in that people will embellish. The thing is, you want to get a job, so you're going to write your resume out in a certain way. The worst thing would be if you have the traits that don't match that job and you get the job. Yes, you've got employment, but you're not going to be happy. And if you're not happy, then it's going to affect your health as well. And you're not going to be enjoying that work. You're going to be miserable. At the same time, that's going to impact on the people around you. So to be able to then turn around and go, right, find the right sort of career. So if I'm looking at employing somebody, I want to look and see, does their face tell me that they have the ability to do certain tasks? And if they have, then I'm looking for that person to be the one that I'd be hiring. But I also take it to the next level. They're going to be working in a team. So the next thing is to understand how they'll interact with the team. And the whole idea is when we employ people, we don't employ them on the skills that they have. The smart employers will employ them for their attitude and then train them for skills.
Right.
So if you know you've got the one with the right attitude, they've got the personality that says, right, they're going to fit in with working with the team that you have, et cetera, then I use that in the employment side of it. And then we set about training them for the skills. And because, again, if they're happier in the team, they're going to be more productive, so more money for the business, less sick leave, less disgruntled staff, less disloyalty. You'll have more loyal staff in the process. So it's a win for everybody. That's why I do the profiling, not to exclude people, but to include the right people.
Right. And it seems interesting. It seems like this could circumvent the whole personality little quiz that they kind of give you at the beginning of interviews. It would be much simpler to read someone with technology. It's interesting to see how it's moving forward.
That's right. So with I used to work with Myers-Briggs and DISC and other profiling systems, but I realized, and I was working with a company that taught currency trading, and when they put their students through the course, they found that most of them were still losing money. They completely changed. When you put your own money on the table, your emotions are really going to come out, and that's what was happening. So we needed a better system. We realized that when we ask people questions, they try and second guess what's being asked.
Yeah.
And when I asked a few of them, well, what's going on? They said, oh, well, we tried to figure out what personality we had to have to be a good trader. And I'm going, no. We need to know your personality so we can teach you to become a good trader. Mm-hmm. And so we need to know that one. And I realized I needed a system where I no longer needed to ask questions. And the good thing about the facial features, they don't change overnight. So right. I can profile somebody from their photograph.
So when you hear the word profiler, a lot of times that's immediately associated with criminal profiler. Mm. So were you ever interested in that while you were getting your education?
To a certain degree. So my clients have been everything from Disney Films and Gillette for their Star Wars Rogue One launch when Gillette were creating their new ad for their new razor.
Yeah,
over in Pinewood Studios in London. But I've also worked with the Federal Police and the Australian Tax Office to help them to understand what makes people tick, how they could then make better connections with them, how to be able to read them more effectively. So I also work with the micro expressions, which I know are used. We've seen it in the show that was on TV many years ago, Lie to Me, which was all about lie detection.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, a lot of people think it's quite sexy, let's catch the liars. Well, if you're always catching lies, you've got a pretty miserable life because there's no enjoyment. Right. And so I use it not so much as a lie detection, but as a truth seeker. So if I can read the expressions, number one, first of all, I profiled you. I know how to speak to you. I then look for your responses in the body language and expression. So I know if I read you right, but I also know if there's something emotionally going on. And if there is, then hey, I can have a chat with you and work out what's going on and possibly help you through what it is that's holding you back.
Right.
And that's a good thing for the person I'm working with, as opposed to just trying to catch people out for telling lies.
Right. And being a profiler for over 50 years at this point, do you ever find it hard, or have you ever found yourself in a situation where you're profiling people in your personal life and it becomes an issue for you?
Not really, because one of the things, as I said, when it comes to the lie detection, it's like at a party, anything like that, that I turn off. Because I know when you're out, people are going to be telling jokes, they're going to be telling stories. You know, the fish was a foot long, you know, 6 foot long and all the rest, but no, it was a tadpole. You know, they're going to embellish it. And we embellish stories and that because it's fun, because it's all about fitting in and enjoying ourselves. So I switch it off for that. But as far as the facial features, I never switch that off, because if I can see your personality, I know how to talk to you in a way in which you're going to appreciate the conversation and we have a better relationship. Yep. So where I'm looking to create relationships, those skills I never turn off. But when it comes to lie detection or working out whether someone's telling me the truth, it's only in a negotiation, an interview or a interrogation or something like that. That's the only time I'll have those skills turned on.
Now, when you were first learning about all of this stuff and first acquiring all these skills, was it a process to learn how to turn it off?
No, well, at first it was more a process of learning how to use it properly.
Right.
And not get caught up in the arrogance of it either. Because a lot of people will learn, you know, the micro expressions, as I said, because they want to catch somebody out. And I go, well, you know, make sure that you're absolutely accurate, because I work with everything's in threes. When it comes to the personality, I'm looking at how you take information in, how you're likely to process it, and what are your emotions going to be when you react. When it comes to the language, it comes down to, well, in what order am I going to give it to you? How much of it am I going to give to you? What style am I going to give it to you in? And then when it comes to reading the micro expressions of body language, I'm going to read it in clusters. I want to see a number of things I'm seeing. One indicator on its own is not enough, because I go off in the wrong direction. I may have missed something or picked it up wrongly. So I put them in clusters. I'm looking at them to be congruent with what's happening at the time. And I want to see if they're in context with what's going on as well. So I'm looking for all the accuracy. And in that, it causes me then to slow down when I'm reading people. So I'm always checking. I would say that when it comes to reading personalities, I would not say that I'm 100% accurate, but I haven't been proven wrong yet in all the years that I've been doing it. But still, I always check everything I do. When you get to the point that you think you've got it all and you're always right, you've lost it. And so, you know, as I say, do everything in moderation and do it with respect for the person that you're profiling at the time.
Now, you see these people, perhaps you've seen people on YouTube who claim to be body language experts and the like. And it does seem that their whole goal is to prove this person on YouTube is lying or this personality is lying. What credence do you put into these people? I mean, I know you don't know them personally, obviously, but what credence do you put into people who seem stirring the pot online?
Well, the first thing is, you know, you profile them to start with before you worry about who they're profiling and looking at, well, why are they doing it in the first place?
Right.
If somebody is, you know, doing an honest description of what, or read of somebody that they're being interviewed, for instance, and they're like, I did one of the New South or the Victorian Premier here in Victoria, Australia.
Oh, okay.
And on that, I gave positives and negatives on everything that I was seeing. So I'm looking at somebody's doing a read of somebody and they're only coming up with negatives all the way through. I go, okay, what's their motive behind it? Everything has got a positive and a negative aspect to it. There's an upside and a downside to everything. So if I'm listening to how they're actually doing their reads, the intensity, the way they're structuring everything, and straight away, you know, if they're trying to just ignite themselves to look great, to put somebody else down, to make themselves feel like they're an expert, well, it's probably because they've got low self-esteem. So, and that's the stuff that I read.
Right.
Not the stuff that they're trying to put out. Yeah. I'm very good at reading through the mask.
Now, do you find at all that, I mean, outside of teaching in proper universities and things like this, do you find it maybe dangerous to have this out in the open where people can pick it up that maybe shouldn't be able to?
Well, the thing is that every child on the planet, or just about every last one of them, except for some with particular conditions, were experts at this.
Right.
Now, facial features, we need to be able to recognize somebody, whether they're a friend or a foe. That was all about survival. Every child is brilliant. And anybody out there who's listening to this, if you've got young children, just stop and think for a moment. How often do they push you to the edge but not push you over the edge?
Right.
They're reading you all the way through. Yes, they recognize you through the facial features, but your body language, your expressions, your energy, everything, every indicator that you put out there, they're reading it. Because this is all based back into our DNA. It's how we survived. But as we get older, all we do is, because we're now doing sports, we're learning things, we're going to school, we're playing different hobbies and other things that we're doing, we're dating and all the rest of it. It's like any muscle, if you don't work it, it atrophies.
Right.
And so it's a skill that just dissipates. But how many times have you heard somebody who's been speaking, everything sounded perfectly fine, but you had a gut feeling something was wrong?
Yeah.
Well, that's the fact that your unconscious mind, you picked up the nonverbals. You picked up the shifts in the tone of voice, the shifts in the body, the expressions, the movements, the different way in which they're breathing and everything else. There's 2 million bits of information going on every second, and we only process 134 bits. But when you start tuning into this, you pick all of that up. But unconsciously, we're picking every bit of it up. And therefore, you then go, something's not right here. Because our unconscious mind and our conscious mind aren't talking to each other. So that I see as the most dangerous thing, is when people have the innate skill inside but don't have the conscious awareness of it.
Right.
So really by me going out and teaching people how to do it, I'm actually improving the situation in the environment, because then people go, ah, that person who I was listening to, it wasn't the fact that it was their expressions or whatever. I realized all of that was fine. There's something else. Ah, that person is somebody. Oh, they reminded me of so-and-so who ripped me off in the past. And now I've misjudged them completely.
Yeah.
So it removes that. All it does, it takes the uncertainty out of what we're doing and puts some certainty into it.
Now, if, say, someone were to know that this profile was going to take place for the interview, would they possibly have enough time to adjust themselves to be able to, quote, beat the system, I guess?
Well, the whole thing is that when you do an interview, it's always a matter of benchmarking a person to start with.
Okay.
You know, you have a chat with them and that you have that idle chit chat and talk about what you're in sport, for instance, and you're talking about the recent game they were at, the one that you know as well, and you ask them a few questions about that. You're going to be able to pick up how they react in their body, their movements and everything else, where their eyes do move to source information, especially when you ask them, well, did you see that particular tackle, for instance, what happened at that point? And they're chatting about it and something they're interested in. We don't try and hide anything because we don't need to. So now we've already benchmarked where they look. Then when we start to interview them and we're looking for the difference in where their eyes shift to, you know, ask them, can you remember such and such? And it's about the sport or whatever. And you see that they look in a particular direction. Then when you ask them, well, what did you see in this situation? Or what would you do here? What did you do in the past? And they look somewhere else. you know that something's not right here.
Right.
I still don't say that they're lying, but what I go is, oh, there's an incongruency here. There's something that's not consistent, so let me check that further. And the more that you then start asking difficult questions, and instead of just asking a flow of questions, bounce the questions around, go backwards and forwards, and you know, get through to a point and go, oh, but back here at this point, what else happened back there? Because to tell lies, for instance, it's hard to create a lie in a backward direction, because we always go from the front to the end. And so when you bounce it around, that then gets them to start getting flustered. Now, we, as I said, 2 million bits of information that we take in, the body and the expressions give away so much. You can try and control your expressions, your body will give it away. If you try and control your body so that your hands aren't moving, your feet aren't moving, et cetera, your face will leak information through all the expressions. And so it's how you conduct the conversation that no matter how good they are at telling lies and getting away with it, you can catch them, especially when they know that you're trying to profile them. That's when they get worried. So like with lie detector tests, somebody who is worried about being misjudged will come up with false positives. And somebody who thinks, well, they're a great liar, they will come up with false negatives. But as soon as they start to think, oh, this other person may be able to catch me out, that's when they start worrying and that's when they start leaking information.
Yeah, I was actually going to compare it to a lie detector test in that take like baseline questions before you start asking the real questions. So that's pretty interesting to think about.
There's been a lot of techniques that people have used in the past to falsify the lie detector test because they're all based on your physiology.
Right.
And if you control your physiology by just, you know, doing different things, then you're going to come up with false readings.
Being in the career for so long, what would you say is the most interesting thing that's happened to you during that time?
Because of the skills I can use from everything from large corporations to businesses of all sizes and also into working with young children, the most interesting thing that area I love is working with the youth, because at the end of the day, the youth are our future. And if you're able to help a very young child be more successful at school, and especially make sure, because a lot of our kids, because of the level of activity they've got, you know, the super movement of their minds and everything else, we misjudge them because they don't fit the education system, and we medicate them for having conditions. If you know how to speak to them the right way, to speak to them the way that they need to be spoken to, you change that relationship straight away. So they're more successful at a young age. If they're more successful there, we know the sports and hobbies that will suit them. So they're going to be happier as they grow up. We then also know the careers that will suit them before they pick their final subjects. So they don't go off to university or college and do a certificate or a degree. That when they finish their degree, they go, I don't like this, and never go into that field. How many people do you know have got multiple degrees and never worked in any of those fields?
Yeah.
So now you find a career that matches your personality. So when you go into the workplace, you're now going to be happier in the work you're doing. So the management gains from that because you're more productive. So they make more money. You're happier. You're going to be happier with your spouse. When you go home, there's going to be less domestic issues going on because you're both happier. And your kids are then going to grow up happier as well. So this is why I like, you can insert my stuff into any area in that cycle from the cradle to the grave and have an impact. But starting at the very front end with a child, you compound it even greater again. So with a lot of my programs now, they're professional development programs for lawyers, accountants, real estate agents, mortgage brokers here in Australia. I'm looking at extending that overseas. I've also got courses now for school teachers for their professional ongoing development. So what they call OPD programs here in Australia, ongoing professional development.
Okay.
So getting it into there, because I profiled a boy 10 years ago who was 6 years old. He had Asperger's. The school didn't want him. The after-schools care didn't want him. His mother, who was a single mum, and she worked managing hotels, so she was time poor. I profiled him from his photographs, gave her a report. She gave that back to the teachers and the after-schools care, was very clever and played each against each other and told each one that the others were doing it. If they didn't do it and it would fail, it would be on their head. So they both came to the party thinking that the others were doing it as well.
Right.
A year later, he was doing presentations in front of the class. A year and a half later, they didn't need the psychologist anymore. They'd reduced his medication with the doctor's approval. 10 years later, his mother's still doing testimonial videos for me. Now he's 16 years old. And they brought a psychologist back in at the age of 14 because now the hormones are kicked in, so he needed to understand that. But in all that time, they've saved so much money on not needing a psychologist, had not because they didn't have the extra expense of special needs or anything else, he was back in the normal area of the school.
Right.
That's what drives me. That's where my passion is to help youth become better adults.
That's perfect. So I want to ask you, besides your continued business and the things you're doing now, what's next for you?
Well, one of the things is I've got my own spiritual journey as well. I've got a group called the Campfire Project. And with all the people I'd work with, especially the men, I'd realized that most men had lost their way within the family. They didn't know their role there. They didn't know their role in the workplace because of all the gender issues, political correctness and everything else. So I created the Campfire Project where men could feel safe to give themselves permission to tell their stories. And that's been growing quite dramatically. I've had women in there from day one. Yeah. So where we are sitting here on Zoom having a chat, I would interview men one-on-one. They would then go into the Campfire Project. Then I'd bring three men in and we'd do a panel discussion with four of us on Zoom talking about all sorts of issues. The women were listening to all this. They were then sending me messages saying they'd never heard men talk this way and they loved it. They wanted to be involved. So I interviewed the women. That then moved on to bringing the women into the panel discussions. And in 2.5 years now, I've had, 225 one-on-one interviews, which are all about an hour long, and 92 panel discussions where we've talked about all sorts of subjects, menstruation, masturbation, masculinity, femininity, what it is to be a man and all the rest of it. And we've had nothing but respectful conversations. So under the hashtag of We Together, as opposed to being Men Too or Me Too, individual groups, we solve problems by standing shoulder to shoulder, working together and appreciating and respecting and realizing the difference between men and women is complementary, not a combatant. And that's what's happening in that movement. So I can see myself doing more work into there. And as far as my business goes, we need more people doing what I'm doing. So my target now is to create and train my own competition. The more people doing what I'm doing, the better. But they have to be doing it right. Or otherwise, like we have in life coaching, we have quite a large array of some really great coaches to some that still haven't worked through their own stuff and they're quite abysmal in the work they're doing. So people, if they're doing this right, as you said before, it's important that it's done right. And so therefore, I've got that moral obligation to create and train my competition.
This is kind of a broad question, but what's your opinion on the life coaching field?
Life coaching, the whole thing is, it's one of the things with the Campfire Project, with everybody who came in and told their one-on-one stories, a lot of them are coaches. And it gave the opportunity to everybody who listened to their interviews to understand whether that person was really had worked through their stuff or not. So it gave them an opportunity to recognize a good coach from a bad coach. And I thought that was absolutely necessary because the fastest growing industry on the planet is technology. We're more connected by devices than ever before, but less connected to ourselves and each other. And in that process, the end result is that so many people are now lost. We need coaches, but we need good ones. So it's not a matter of saying, right, we need to get rid of a lot of coaches. No, we need to improve them. We need more of them.
Right.
Because there's so many more people that need them. And so I believe that there are a lot of great coaches out there, and yes, there's a lot of bad ones. The whole thing is to be able to recognize the good from the bad. And if you've got issues or got things in your life that you aren't right, that you want to change, that you want to improve, get yourself a coach. But ask them, what have you been through? Tell me how you went through what I'm going through now. How did you go through it and come out the other side?
Yeah.
Show me from your experience, because if you haven't got experience, you might as well be just teaching from a textbook.
Exactly. Well, Alan, I had a lot of fun talking to you and learning about you. And if you ever want to come back, don't hesitate to ask me. And thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks very much for that. And I hope your listeners get a lot out of this.
If you would like to interact and learn from Alan Stevens, be sure to go to his websites, alanstevens.com.au or alanstevens.thinkific.com. That's alanstevens.thinkific.com. And check out the Campfire Project on Facebook. Join the group. It used to be for men to just share feelings with each other, but the group is open to men and women. Women participate, and it's about building communication, relationships. And also, it's a good place to network, so go ahead and check that out. Right after the commercial break, we are going to preview the next guest and wrap up the show. Let's do it.
Since the inception of Am I Cancelled, one woman has shown integrity and grace, beauty and loyalty above all others. And now, that woman is the official sponsor of Am I Cancelled.
Thank you, Raven Michelle Everding, for your continued support. Now back to the show.
Thank you, Raven Michelle Everding, indeed. Now, coming up on Friday, we have Jen Taylor, also known as The Naked Podcaster. If that's not enough to spark your interest, I don't know what is, but we talk about why she started doing podcasts naked, what it means. We talked about her book. We talked about her being a motivational speaker, her being a foster mom to 18 biological or foster kids, and we talked about her being an avid runner and a health enthusiast, and just so much more. So if that seems like your speed, then go ahead and check it out. I dare you. I dare you to check out the podcast interview with Jen Taylor. But that's it for me. I will see you on Friday. Goodbye!
Well, that was an awful show. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week to find out if we're canceled. Until then, this has been Am I Canceled?